Foodie Films is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. Hey there, foodies, and welcome back to Foodie Films. Of course, this is your host, your chef de cinema cuisine, Kyle Reinfried. What's going on? What's happening? How are you? How you doing, foodies? We are in, a full month now of quarantining. This is the 15th, what should have been tax day, but at least that's been delayed, like everything else. But, so a full month of quarantining. Hope it's going as best as it can be for you guys. I know I'm starting to go a little stir crazy and just having a little problems with the whole self-value category, but gotta do what's necessary. Gotta flatten that curve. Hopefully we start seeing it to drop. Anyway, what have you guys been up to? I've been cooking a lot. When it's nice out, go for a bike ride, or I go for a walk. Of course, I wear a mask for protection. Been binge-watching a lot of shows. Rewatched. Well, I never watched the whole second season of Westworld, so I did that. And now I'm all caught up to however many episodes of the third season has aired. Boy, man, that recent episode, if you're listening to it, like, you know, this episode the day it comes out, that episode, I think it was called Genre. Yeah, I was like, oh, that's a great episode title, because Aaron Paul ends up getting that drug, punctured into him, and he goes through different story genres, and it's like black and white, and then it's like horror, and then like a romance vibe to it. They're just having a lot of fun with this season of Westworld, so that's cool. Just today, my roommate decided to do like a trial run of Hulu, so even more stuff to watch on that. And we watched the first season. I always knew about Brockmire, but I haven't had cable in a while, just have like, you know, an internet package at my apartment. So we watched the first season of Brockmire, and it did not disappoint. A show hasn't made me laugh that hard in a while, besides obviously the backdrop of baseball. I'd say it's very similar to Eastbound and Down, just the whole kind of like asshole alcoholic drug user underdog story. So if you like that, but if you like the comedic stylings of Hank Azaria, I don't think it'll disappoint. Not a lot of food on that show, but a lot of drinking. I like the whole, there was one episode that there was a bunch of references to Sambuca, and I love my cordials, guys. I love my, what is that, digestif? Is Sambuca, I don't know. It's not an aperitif, because you have it, the dessert cordial. We'll just call it, we'll keep it a cordial. I need some proper cordial glasses, guys. I love things with specific purposes. Anyway, got a great one for you today. I laugh probably just as much as I was watching Brockmire. I've got Johnny Adler, your global foodie. Met him back in September at the All About Downtown Street Festival in Jersey City. He lives in Jersey City, wears a lot of hats. He is into food. He is into traveling. And you're going to get to know him right now. So here we go, me talking with Johnny Adler.
We're just gonna hop like right into it.
Let's do it.
And you like going by John, Jonathan, Johnny?
Johnny.
Johnny.
Johnny. The only time I don't go by, I have certain exceptions. Of course, everything has a story. Mm-hmm. Johnny is just like what I like going by. I think it matches my personality. John is what I do for reservations.
Okay.
I think they take me more seriously. If I call and I say I'm Johnny, they're like, okay, so you're a 12-year-old with the voice of someone that's been smoking cigarettes for 45 years. And then Jonathan is what my mom calls me when she's pissed at me.
So many iteations. Yeah, I'm Kyle. Yeah. There's not really...
There's not many...
There's like...
There's Kyle and there's Kyle who punches holes in walls.
Yeah, I'm not that Kyle.
You're not that Kyle. You're cool Kyle.
I think I've kicked a hole in a wall once, but okay. I never punched... When I was a toddler because I wanted to go see... Not toddler. I don't know why I said toddler. A little child and I wanted to go see Space Jam, I think, and like I was told we couldn't go see it that day and I kicked a hole in the wall.
Honestly, you might have underreacted.
I think so.
Good
I think
you.
So.
Brave.
We're just hopping right into this. Where am I right now?
You're actually at my main job. You are at Stadium. Just a quick thing about Stadium. Basically, it's a corporate group lunch service servicing 59th Street and below, and then out to a couple boroughs and even Jersey City. Woo woo. And basically, so what you have is an issue where. Let's say there's a team meeting of 20 people and you got two pescatarians, two vegans, two gluten-free, so on and so forth, one kosher. It's impossible to order from a single restaurant. So what we enable them to do is they can order from 25 different restaurants and receive it all at the same time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, even on an individual level, let's say I want fries from Shake Shack, a salad from Sweet Green, and a dessert from Magnolia Bakery, I can get all those things delivered together. My role is the difficult role of tasting food. No, but basically it's onboarding new restaurants. So we try and onboard, launch two new restaurants a week. So it's about 100 per year. And so I'm the only person that does that.
Wow. That's quite an undertaking. I mean, how do you make sure everything is kind of arriving at the same time in the manner that you want it to arrive, meaning like
so
the freshness
logistics.
And, you know, yeah,
that's
you know.
The logistics team. There's a series of just-in-time logistics, which is like, you know, Toyota's really well known for, as well as just we have an extensive tech team in India. We have like a dozen people that like just work for us. Mm-hmm. And so they do like crazy coding that just like, so like if a dish, there's a lot of orders, it goes to a specific code because that area has more space for it. And like we also, you know, have ways to keep hot food hot, cold food cold.
Sure, yeah. Your guy in the chair.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, you know what, right now, for just the foodies out there, why don't you tell them your name, who you are? I mean, just your involvement in the world of food, which it seems like there's just so many.
Yeah, there's a lot. So my name is Johnny Adler, not to be mistaken with the furniture designer Jonathan Adler, although I do get a lot of those photos whenever someone passes a store, Jonathan Adler, they're like, did you know that this is a store? And I'm like, no, I've never fucking Googled my name.
Do you own any Jonathan Adler furniture?
I do not. It's too expensive. Their candles are like $70 and they say like Quaaludes on them. And I'm like, I don't need that in my life. Although they do have a vodka scented candle and I feel like that's kind of my spirit animal.
That's kind of good. One time I saw a bourbon scented car freshener. I'm like, that's the last thing you want in your car smelling.
Yeah. They roll down the window and they're just like,
Ossifer, I swear.
It's the air freshener. Yes.
That, or if you do drink, you should have one with you and just be like, Officer,
yeah. You can't even predict these things. So my role in the world of food, I think you have to go back to, so I went to an Orthodox Jewish elementary, middle, and high school, like full blown, like learned, like my first like language that I like kind of knew before Hebrew was like Aramaic, which is like an ancient language.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So,
From a different time.
From a different time. And like, you know, just crazy. And like class from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. every day.
Where was this? In
this
like
is
Brooklyn?
In Boston.
Oh, in Boston.
Brookline. Yeah.
Oh.
So that was
fun. Jewish people up in Boston live in a neighborhood called Brookline?
Yes.
That just sounds like a Jewish way to say Brooklyn. Brooklyn.
I know, like, Brookline. Brookline. Yeah, no, exactly. Brookline. And actually really funny.
Thank you. And
thank you so much. Thank you so much. I was really, really
hoping that's the end of the episode I just needed.
So I went to school there, and then I think it was around like October of 10th grade, I was like over it. And so I left, I went to like a more egalitarian, still Jewish school. But after that, I remember actually what my first non-kosher dish was. I was on my way, my dad lives in New York and we grew up in Boston, and I was on my way, child of divorce, I was on my way to go visit, and then I was hungry, and there was a Subway, and I was like, I'm going to eat non-kosher. Little did I know it's barely even food, but I had a meatball parm sub, and I almost came.
This is a PG podcast.
This is a PG podcast. Okay, yeah, I fucking lost it. And then I was like, oh my God, I have so much to make up for. And so ever since I've been making up for it, my first major food-related thing was helping open those. I lived in Jerusalem, I lived in Israel my junior year of high school, and then also in between high school, like a gap year.
Yeah.
And so in like junior year of high school, I helped run this and open run this food kitchen that's basically it's, you know, homeless people can come and get food, but the whole idea behind it was more dignified because they had an option of like one of two vegetables or like one of three vegetables, one of two starches, one of two meats, and like dessert.
An actual meal.
And someone would like, they could sit down at a table and someone would like serve them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's like, that's always been very important to me. I mean, I eat so much that like the idea of being hungry or not having like medium quality food is like so shitty. So that was my first dive into food. Then I decided to go to Tulane in New Orleans. And then that's when the food thing really In fact, my college essay was about how your different moods change the way you cook. And I included not one, not two, but 10 photos of grilled cheese in my college app essay. And in the last one, it was a collage of different grilled cheeses with a two-way arrow with a bunch of different emojis.
You had like a Venn diagram, whole pie chart.
Literally, I was like, if you're feeling lethargic, you might make this recipe, you might burn it a bit, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, what went into that research? Lots of grilled cheeses.
Yeah, lots of grilled cheeses in high school.
Was there like a study group? Were you on the other side of a reverse mirror or anything like that?
It's just something that I thought about. Okay. I was just like, this is like, I feel like I wanted to stand out and be just like, I didn't want to do some boring, like, well, I did this and when I traveled to Paris. I was just like.
And what was your degree in?
My degree ended up being in marketing.
Okay. All right.
And so it started off, I originally went because I wanted to do architecture. And then I saw architecture. I was like, no.
Is Tulane like an architecture school?
There's a big like architecture program there. But yeah, they always say like after freshman year, you don't see them anymore because they're like, just there's too much work.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then I was like, okay, I'll do what every other business does. It does, and I just and I was like finance, and I was like, God, this sucks. There was just no collaboration. It was so competitive in a non-healthy way, and I was like, I love people. Like, how do I do this professionally? I love people, and I do love money. So like, and I was like, oh, the study of people is essentially marketing. So while I was at Tulane, I held numerous jobs. My first one actually was at Commander's Palace.
Oh, that is just like a...
Yeah.
That is the end all be all of like old school. It's like that and how do you pronounce it? Galatoire?
Galatoire, yeah.
It's like those two, you know, are like...
When I visited Tulane with my mom, we went out to dinner and we went to... we went to lunch at this place, Cochon, and I went there and I had this like crawfish empanada, essentially, like a crawfish pie.
Yeah.
And when I ate that, I said to my mom, I said, I have to go to Tulane.
Was this your
she
first...
She was proud of her Jewish boy.
Was this your first... eating shellfish?
Yeah.
But is this your... Was that your first trip ever to New Orleans?
Yes.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, the food
then,
awakening.
Yeah, yeah, and then I went to Commander's Palace at night, and I said to my mom, I said, when I do go to Tulane, I'm working here. Wow. I said it like out loud. I was like, it's happening. And I ended up working at Commander's Palace for about a year. I did anything from, so I was a food runner at first. I had no real restaurant experience.
Sure, yeah.
It was also very odd. All the guys there would like bully me in a way of like, oh, I bet you go to college. And like, that was like the big like bully. Yeah, they like trip me and be like, study much?
Yeah.
yeah, I was like, okay.
So what exactly does a food runner do? Because it's not like a busboy. You are
So Commander's Palace is enormous.
Yeah.
There can be about 800 people, 800
It's like an estate.
Yeah, yeah. There's seven dining rooms. There's like about 800 people for like dinner, let's say. And, you know, each head is at least like $100. It's crazy.
That's crazy.
So basically, the food runner just brings like when the food is ready, and like you put the covers over each one, they're like a tin cover, and then you bring it to the various dining rooms. And so you just read the ticket, bring it to the dining room. But these are like 60-pound plates, which like, you know, they have eight dishes on them. It's scalding hot, and you just have to like I don't like feel like heat on my hand anymore. And you have to carry it on three fingers, like a three prong. And you have to carry it up there. It's also upstairs. And if a guest is coming downstairs, you have to like let them go first. And you're like, oh, this is impossible to hold.
Did you ever drop a tray?
I never did. The only thing I did drop was I was coming out of the dessert area, and they had these horrific, I mean, they're so good, but these like, it's like a praline pecan sort of parfait, but it's in this massive like old school like parfait cup, and so it's just so wobbly and top heavy. And then I was turning like to leave, but that's also like the cheapest thing ever. It doesn't matter. But I remember one time,
that's why I don't snowboard, because I'm just top heavy,
because I will just
so I'm like a praline parfait.
I was always interested in the food and would always talk to the chefs and everything. So they were like, let's get you back here. And so then I was doing like prep cook for a little bit, and like a little bit line cook, but mostly prep. But we were prepping. This is the worst anyone dropping anything ever. And it's fucking gross. So we were prepping turtle soup. So for the turtle soup, it's like the very famous thing there with a dash of like sherry. And so it's, if you do just turtle, it's like way too swampy and like gross. So it's half veal, half turtle to like sweeten it out and just even it out.
Yeah.
So in each batch, there's 50 pounds of turtle meat and 50 pounds of veal, and it's like ground and like bloody and whatever, and just someone was walking down with the turtle meat during service and it just tumbled down the stairs, and there's just like, it flew all over, like on the wall, on
the ground. 'Cause we're talking like, I mean, bits of turtle meat are not big, so I'm sure they're just like, it looks like it's brain matter.
Literally, it looked like a brain exploded. So yeah, that was fun. So I did that. That was my first thing. And I mean, I learned so much. The amount, the attention to detail that they have a list of every single person that's coming in that night that they can gather any information on before they even, before they've dined there.
They got like dossiers?
Yeah. They fold, literally, like I'm talking paragraphs long.
Yeah.
Of just like, he works here, like he might have this like woman here who's not, like, don't acknowledge, don't call her the wife, like whatever. They work in this, don't mention this, send this type of way, like also every sort of thing. They have one on me, they have one on like anyone that's gonna
die. Like the food department of the CIA.
It's crazy. It's really, but that way they know everything. They'll be like, if you know, you come back for a second time, they'll be like, without you even asking, they'll put like your Diet Coke with two ice cubes, but the can, like they just know
that's the
everything.
Next level. Okay, let me ask, because this episode will be coming out after I do a whole New Orleans run.
Oh, my God.
Month of February. So I was just down in New Orleans, well, twice, once recently. I'm going next week as well.
Yeah.
I went down there and I interviewed the GM head chef of Parkway Tavern.
Yeah. Parkway Bakery. That is my favorite place, and the only po' boy place that's open on Sundays.
Yeah, it's amazing. He made me the baby maker, which is fried oysters, bacon, cheddar cheese, remoulade, lettuce, tomato, pickles. It's so good. I had Big Sam, a Funky Nation on musician.
So cool. Because
I wanted to get the music aspect, you know. I had the owner of Pat O'Brien's on.
Yeah, Pat O's.
I had the head butcher of Cochon.
Ah, so good.
And then...
did you get their oysters while you were there?
I've had not this time, but I...
The like Tabasco one of my, butter. Yeah. That's so good.
Yeah. I had the VP of Communication and Public Relations for the city of New Orleans on.
Wow.
And am I blanking? How many people did I just say so far? I think I just said everybody.
Yeah. I think you got most of the city. It's a small place.
Well, I tried to get, exactly. I tried to get, you know, like I'm getting someone from like, you know, like government area. We got the drink, we got the music, we got the food, yeah. we got the Cajun butcher, you know, yeah. everything like that. So point being, this episode will come out after that. But a big thing I was talking about with a lot of them is the approachability that people have down there. Mm-hmm. Like, did you find that, like, when working at a place like Commanders, or just living in the city, like going to school down there, versus, I mean, New York, the craziness, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
so a couple things. One, to start, for sure, when you walk by someone and they say like, "Hey, how's it going?" They mean it.
Yeah.
You know, they're not like
it's a conversation.
It's not just like they're like they want you to stop for a second, take a breath, and talk.
Yeah.
I found, so I had a couple other food-related roles. I worked for this one foundation called Fresh Food Factor, which makes organic meals for over a dozen underserved schools in the greater New Orleans area. I volunteered and then also did catering for this Southern Food and Beverage Museum. I had my
That's such an awesome place.
Oh, it's the coolest place.
When I went back, and this year, I'm definitely, it's going to be like at least like four visits I will have gone.
Yeah.
Like I went back in October, and that was the first time I went to the Food and Beverage Museum. And that place is just awesome.
Did you see the Jen Air kitchen in the back?
The restaurant next to it?
Not the restaurant.
You're saying like the display that they have?
Or? Well, so in the back, so if you're looking in, you just entered the museum. If you go to the back and to the left, all the way to the left, it's where they have like cooking classes and stuff like that. And so all
they didn't have a class going on when I was there.
Yeah, and so it was so fun working there because I would also run a lot of those classes.
Oh, awesome.
And,
okay.
And the Jen Air sponsors it, so anytime they come out with a new appliance, they just give it to them and replace it for free. And it's crazy. And then they have like this whole outdoor area now where they teach people like how to butcher deer, how to like make and dewey, how to like do all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have like hardcore Cajun people doing it.
That's awesome. Like all the hogshead. That's crazy.
So yeah, I did those things, and I had my own brisket stand called Better Than Bubby's. I did marketing for the Commander's Palace restaurants. The amount of food things I did were amazing, but it's just like when you meet people, I mean, I'm in a food related job now, but everything's just like, you know, bam bam bam, like what can you do for me, blah blah blah, and then there it's just like everyone's just nicer, and it's not nice in a way where they're like anyone's being taken advantage of necessarily.
Yeah.
It's just like people just prefer to be nice. Isn't that a novel idea? Fucking New York. But I mean, there's pros and cons to each. Like New Orleans runs, I like to say New Orleans runs on island time.
Yeah.
So like it's a pro, like if there's a pothole, that's not getting fixed in the next 2-3 years. Like everything runs very, very slow.
Mm-hmm.
Everything revolves around, you know, a couple families and the Saints. And like that's about it. I mean there's a lot of nepotism. That's also partially why I did leave, because I was like, I'm never gonna be more than a manager at a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
No knocks to that, but that's not what I was pursuing. And like unless, you know, you're a Boudreaux, Brennan, whatever, like it's, you're not gonna
There is a level of just I don't want to say corruption, but I mean you definitely said it with like nepotism, but like I mean there is like I mean just the fact back in October, it was right after the Hard Rock collapse, you know. Mm-hmm. that hotel that was being built, and I mean just every like Uber driver had their 2 cents of just like, yep, like it could have been the humidity, it was the cheap products, it was the people that used to make it, it was the government that wanted to blah blah blah, you know. It's just like, and just while a lot of horrible things have happened to the city, like from natural disasters to the man-made disasters like BP oil spill, there seems to be a lot of like people in the city that make it they're their own worst enemy.
Yeah. You know? No, definitely. I mean, there's a long history of corruption, and then it's just, I mean, it's difficult, and then there's so much poverty. There's one of the greatest gaps and wealth gaps in the country. I believe it's Miami and New Orleans are the two largest wealth gaps. I mean, you have places in like, well, because the people that are rich in New Orleans, like they're great, 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 great grandchildren.
Sure, yeah, it's just like they're over in the Garden District.
Yeah,
just,
and the people that are poor, their great, 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 great grandchildren are going to be poor. There's very little like opportunity for growth. The school system like kind of ensures that.
Yeah,
it has the largest charter school system. Like a majority of people in New Orleans use the charter schools. But some of the charter schools are horrific. And because it's just like, and there's no funding, and I mean there's a series of issues, not to mention it will be underwater in the next 50 years. Light stuff.
Exactly. All stuff easily solvable.
And, exactly. So yeah, I mean I definitely got like entrenched in food there. I think what also enamored me with like New Orleans was I mean, everything is so intertwined in the sense where it's like everyone's so passionate and you feel it in all these different aspects.
100%.
And then also, I think it's really, you know, I'm sure you've heard people say before, like, there's no such thing as like American food. Everything is like from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. There's arguably about three distinct American cuisines. There's barbecue, and of course, within barbecue, you have Texas. You have three different types in North Carolina. You got South Carolina Gold, St. Louis, Kansas City. Let's just call that. And then you have two other ones, and they're both in Louisiana. You got Cajun and Creole.
Yeah.
And those are both in Louisiana. So I think it's like, so two-thirds of what's distinctly American is in this place that feels so unlike America.
Yeah,
you know, you go there, and I had a professor, and he always said, like, the best part about New Orleans is that it's so close to the United States.
Wow, that's a great line.
Yeah, and it's just like, it's true. You go there, and you're like, you get this different feeling. It's kind of like when you first step into New York, and you're like, oh my God, is there like cocaine in the air? Like, it is intense. This is like,
electrifying.
Everyone is there, it's like that in a different way because, like, wow, I can feel the warmth, not just from the weather, but from the food, from the people, from the music, from the art, from it's amazing.
I love a good saying for a city. One of my favorites is up in Montauk. They say they're a drinking town with a fishing problem. That's perfect because I love a good harbor town, but that's just, when was the last time you're down in New Orleans?
The last time I was there, great question. I might go for Mardi Gras this year, but just for Monday, Tuesday. I can't. I'm too old to do
like for actual Fat Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's just too expensive. I mean, I'm assuming you know people that you can crash with.
Yeah. I have a lot of friends.
I need to find someone.
Person
to crash
that like runs a Southern Food and Beverage Museum. She's like my second mom.
Oh wow. Whatever. Okay. Yeah.
So if you go back down there, I'd be happy to introduce you to her.
That'd be awesome.
She does like cookbooks and all sorts.
Oh, that'd be
cool.
I'd love to have her on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. She's a character for sure. I would say the last time I was there is about a year ago.
Okay.
But
you try to make it down like once a year?
Yeah, at least once a year.
Yeah.
I mean, luckily the flights are pretty cheap. It's pretty cheap to, like, because I know people there, so it's just a matter of like just taking time off, and also there's all the entire world to explore.
Yeah, that last trip I took, my flight was $110.
Yeah.
And this one, I booked it a little late, so it's $200.
It's always pretty, pretty cheap, other than like the big dates. But like, it's always pretty cheap. It's not like going to like Miami or even like Chicago can be too expensive.
Yeah,
randomly.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So, do you graduate Tulane and then you leave? Are you down there for a little while? Or
so
what's going
I
on
also.
After?
I ran into a little bit of trouble, and let's just say I got shushmended for a semester.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't anything like violent or anything like that. It was the greener variety. But
good old New Orleans.
Yeah,
exactly.
But it was fine. So I stayed down there for a little bit, and I continued to work, and I volunteered a bunch and all that stuff. And then I moved back to Boston, and I was working at my I was working at a scrap metal yard north of Boston, you know.
Oh, yeah, still staying in the food industry.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So scrap metal yard. I also have, like, a background somewhat in, like, pharmaceuticals, like oncology and stuff like
that. Okay, yeah.
So here, you know, bits and pieces here and there.
Sure.
So I was working at the scrap metal yard, and then I was just trying to, like, I was working there just until I could find my, like, right thing, and I would work there for 2 months and travel to, like, Europe for 6 months. Actually, 6 months, 6 weeks. When I went there for 6 weeks, I gained 35 pounds.
Wow.
I've
gained weight when going on, like, the longest trip I've done to Europe is, like, 6 weeks.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, you, I feel like there you walk around a lot more.
Oh, no, I was walking, like, 20, 30,000 steps a day, but I was also drinking from the second I woke up. And then I was probably spending, like, 100 to 200 euros a day on food and drink. Like, no, like, concerts, no crazy. Like, I was going to, like, 5 to 6 meals a day.
Yeah, all that scrap metal money.
Yeah, exactly. And then I was, like...
Where'd you visit?
I was dating someone who lives in Holland at the time. Oh, actually met in New Orleans. I started in England and went over to Paris. And I'd been to a decent amount of these places before, but this trip was strictly food.
Yeah, like, you're with someone that knew
I knew all these places. Okay. I do a lot of research, which I'll get into momentarily.
But we got a whole bunch of
So then I went to Paris. I don't like Paris that much, actually. I mean, the food's incredible, but it's just like, meh. but then I went over to Belgium, and then Holland. I was there for a while, like, with her and her family. And then went down to Munich, and then Austria, then Emilia-Romagna, and then I went over to Ireland because I was supposed to be my mom there, but then she made a mistake and she, whatever. Anyways, I was in Ireland, and then I met up with my mom in Iceland.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so out of all that, what would you say was your, like, favorite food destination?
Emilia-Romagna, like Parma, Modena, Bologna. Yeah. Like, I mean, that was just fucking outrageous.
Yeah, next
I mean,
level.
It's
yeah,
just, I yeah. mean, that's the food capital of the foodiest place ever. It was just amazing. Just stuff like, just simple stuff like pumpkin tortellini and tortellini and brodo and just a bolognese. I mean, it's just, oh man. it was incredible. Iceland was cool. Ireland was fine.
I was really, like, when it comes to Ireland and then, like, also then, like, the UK and, like, London, like, I mean, every place is kind of having, like, a food renaissance right now.
Yeah.
But I went to Ireland for the first time 2-3 summers ago, something like that. I was impressed by the food scene because it was always, like... Just like, I mean, being Irish myself, it was just like, yeah, they know how to boil things.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Like. Well, no, they have a good, like, veggie scene now and all sorts of stuff. But
their seafood scene I thought was pretty good. Yeah,
I think the reason why I was a little annoyed was just like, well, I was, at the end of my, like, tour
I also didn't
have as much money, and I didn't realize it would be, like, the same price as London.
Yeah.
Like, it's really expensive everywhere. Also, the beer fucking sucks. Like, it's like, oh, would you like a flat red ale? It's like, ew, no, give me bubbles or give me a fucking IPA. I think it's funny though, going to all these places. So I've been to a little over 500 breweries.
Wow.
I love brewery. And I'm a vodka drinker through and through, but like, I love the what breweries do for a community. Like, I was just in Asheville and they have about 70 out there.
Yeah, I was there in September for a bachelor party.
And did you go to Buxton Hall?
Oh man,
that was Food and Wine best sandwich in the country.
Oh wow, didn't know that. Buxton Hall.
Buxton Hall Barbecue, but they have the best fried chicken sandwich. It has like pimento cheese and American cheese on it.
Okay.
Oh my god. But
gonna write that down.
Yeah. So I have a whole Asheville list if you need it, if you plan on going back.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Like
I did for New Orleans, that's definitely a city that I'm gonna go.
I've been,
and do.
I've
a
been
bunch
there.
Of,
yeah, like yeah. 5 times now.
Oh yeah, I, that was my first time back.
Love it. Yeah. And it's just gorgeous. But I. what was I saying? Oh, yeah. Yeah, the beers, I thought it's really funny how, like, you know, America up until, like, the 90s or even the early 2000s was kind of the laughing stock of the beer world. Like,
yeah.
There was, I think, when Sierra Nevada started in, like, 1980-ish, there was less than 100 breweries nationwide.
That's
crazy. Now there's over 6,000.
I mean, we really stepped up. I mean, now I feel like we are the beer leaders.
Capital, yeah,
and, yeah,
for sure.
Yeah,
and it's funny because now you have all these places like in England, they're starting to do like American style IPAs, and, which is funny because they started IPAs,
yeah, exactly,
but they just never
yeah.
cared about it.
That's crazy. And just now, I mean, I did an episode with Hermit Thrush, which is a brewery in Brattleboro, Vermont that does only sours.
Yeah. There's a place in Asheville called the Funkatorium.
I went there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's owned by the Wicked Weed.
Wicked Weed,
I always think it's so weird that people like are like, nah, I'm not going to go to Wicked Weed anymore because they got bought out. It's like they're making the same exact beer. Now they can just make it more consistently. And why are you angry that someone like succeeded?
Well, that's like New Belgium then just got bought out as well.
Yeah.
And it's just like in their deal, they got such a fantastic deal. Like my friend was the friend that it was his bachelor party. He's really into beer and like was breaking it down for me. He's like, they pretty much got a deal that they keep getting to do whatever they want to do. Number one, it's like it was a everyone that was working there like owned a share or whatever, so they all became wealthy, and then they pretty much just by being bought by like whatever, you know, overall company it was, gets to go like, here's fun toys, work, you know, like make more delicious beer.
And it's that's just a, like, and the, people the, are like, oh, you sold out to the man. It's like, no, they all made money. And
oh, every great. Uber driver had like their own opinion down there too.
Of course.
No, but like, New Belgium, it felt like a Google campus.
And oh my God. And did you go Sierra Nevada?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That
Sierra Nevada was like
crazy.
Yeah. It was like a mountain resort.
Yeah. And then the food there is actually really good as well. But like, and then they're just
I had like, I went down, you know, like that field
amphitheater?
All the way.
Yeah.
But even past the amphitheater, you go all the way down. And then they had some kind of like, I don't know, crazy chicken leg that I got, and like they had a great barbecue down there.
It's amazing.
Yeah, my favorite brewery is probably Burial was amazing.
Burial is awesome. I mean, that's like hardcore rock. That place is cool. High Wire is good. There's a lot. I mean, it's just there's so many.
We were there for 3 days, and we tried to. Yeah, you know, it was like, I forget how many there were of us. I think 13. So just getting 13 guys, let's just get a flight here, but then everyone starts, you know. And I wish it was a to go cup city.
I know.
That'd
right?
be amazing.
I know. I love Asheville. It's amazing. I love it so much. I love. I'm doing a semi-dry January, except for Asheville, and then one brunch.
Oh, so you were just down there?
Yeah. I was just down there.
Yeah.
It was, oh my God, I ate so much.
Yeah. I think I want, you know, I'll probably go back in like, I don't know, late, maybe over the summertime. It was warm down there, and so we were down there
early.
It
never gets too hot.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Yeah. Like, if it's hot, it's like, I don't know, like 80.
Well, let's get, you know, because we're talking about your global travels, let's talk about your global foodie.
Yeah.
This other, you know, I mean, you've got here with Stadium, but then you've got your global foodie. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. So this actually came out of, you know, I used to like visit my dad a lot in New York, and it always bothered me seeing people like walk into like Familia Pizza or like Sbarro's. And I was like, oh, you poor schmuck.
Yeah.
I then came to realize it wasn't necessarily that they thought it was like good. I think they had like choice paralysis.
Yeah, just a little like sensory overload.
Yeah,
and just
it's like
yeah,
there's
yeah,
30,000
yeah.
restaurants in New York City. So like, what are you gonna do with that? So it started off with an idea where it was like, okay, what if there was like an algorithm that could aggregate you know, like Google reviews, Yelp reviews, blogs, blah, 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 and then you could input things like budget, willingness to travel, you know, I don't like Indian food, I do love Italian food, blah, 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 and it would just like make an itinerary for you. Then I realized I don't know how to do any of that. But I was like, but I do have all this information in my head.
Yeah, just from traveling.
Just from traveling and just reading and like, I mean, just, I love it.
Yeah.
So then I also thought about how like, you know, when you go to travel, when you go to like, you know, you're doing 2 weeks in Italy, you're spending thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, and you might not go back. So, like, you should never have a meal that's anything except for exceptional.
Why waste that
why
time?
Why waste if, that? If, I mean, yeah. I always give, like, the, paint the picture of, like, okay, so you get to Rome, you know that there's amazing cacio e pepe, you know, or maybe you don't, but you know there's, like, this and that, and here you are sitting in your hotel room looking at best pasta mm-hmm. Rome and yeah. finding out, oh, shit, it's Sunday. All the places that are really, like, on the first on the list are closed or they're packed or whatever.
Yep.
So basically what the service I provide is 100% guarantee for every single meal to be outstanding. So I can do as little as, like, one or two recommendations per day to, like, planning an entire day around food.
Mm-hmm.
And also planning activities and stuff like that. And then also reserving. So places like Croatia, for example, very few restaurants have menus, like very few, especially like the smaller ones. So you have to, like, go on to blogs and go on to, like, TripAdvisor and all this stuff and find the photos, and then you have to take that and translate it.
Yeah.
So, like, to figure out what's on the menu, what the prices are, do all the conversion rates and all that stuff. And so it's really a time value money thing.
Yeah.
So I plan stuff for people. I just finished a list for one of my best friends going to Mexico City.
Amazing food, outrageous.
And it's really for a range of age groups. It can be for, like, I did a thing for my friend and his two siblings going to Copenhagen, Berlin, and one other place. But then I also do for, like older couples that, like, they're doing, like, a couples trip to Nashville for a weekend. They want to focus on music and, like, culture.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, they don't care for, like, a bottomless brunch or something.
Okay, yeah.
So really the wide range, and I always do, like, a free consulting first, and but really it just came from a genuine, like, hatred of people not having good food. It just, I'm like, why would you go to New Orleans and go to Bubba Gump? And actually, I did this in college a lot because people would ask me so much. I did like a mini version of this. Because people would be like, hey, my parents are in town. Hey, it's Valentine's Day, blah, blah, blah. And it was just, like, too much. I was like, oh, my God. Maybe I should just charge people for this. and I did have quite a few connections, so I could get people into restaurants.
Sure, I could get into.
And then that's just, it's kind of just grown from there. And that's pretty much what that is, yeah.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, like, I always say, like, one of the things I pride myself on and just get general joy from is recommending a meal to somebody. And if I don't get to experience it in person with them, I just love hearing about it afterwards. So, I mean, that's what
you're getting that text, like, oh my God.
Yeah. And, like, yeah, that the picture of, like, you know, like, oh my God, that meal was absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And I know, like, what friends, like, are into, like, what cuisine and, like,
who's
going to
be adventurous, who just wants, like, a simple, good roast chicken. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. Yeah, so I do those things, but it doesn't stop there. I also do, I run food tours in Jersey City and soon Manhattan for Beyond the Plate.
Yeah, that's how we met. We met at the All About Downtown Festival.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly. So I do that as well. That actually came about because one of my friends from Tulane, she lives in Hoboken and she has her own business, and she went to, like, a speed women in biz, like, entrepreneurial women networking thing, and she met Alessia, who runs Beyond the Plate food tours,
who I had on because she I guess used to have a food tour company, or did become Beyond the Plate.
Became Beyond the Plate. Used to be Jersey Girl. Jersey Girls. Yeah. But that name doesn't travel across the Hudson.
Yes.
Alessia was like, yeah, I have, like, this opening for a tour guide who I'm looking for. And she's like, oh, I have the person for you. And at the time, it was Jersey Girls. And she was like, we really only have, like, female tour guides. They're just, like, more enthusiastic, blah, blah. She's like, you do not know this guy. Meanwhile, this is the person who I was in, like, a business class with. And for our final presentation, I brought in 6 bottles of champagne. like with the teacher there, and I was just like sipping on it. It's like I feel like this is okay. It's an open container, not on campus, but that's fine.
So when you're giving a tour, like, what are you talking in between the places?
I'm just talking kind of like this. About food. I'm talking. I mean, there are some lines about like the historical stuff.
But sure.
You kind of just read the crowd if they're like going to be into that. You know, if it's a bachelorette party, I'm not going to be like, let me tell you about the transit, like Hudson or whatever. Yeah.
Welcome to the Golden Door City.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm not just going to like.
You live in Jersey City.
Yes. Yeah. I do.
What neighborhood?
Right near Grove Street. Erie and 4th.
I live up in the Heights.
Okay. I mean, Heights is blown up with food as well.
Oh, yeah. 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 I just went to Bread and Salt for the first time.
What'd you think?
Okay, so
I was hoping for something like that.
I was number one from the get go. So my girlfriend and her roommate were just like, "Oh, it's great," and I'm just like, and my roommate I'll call it a bad experience, like ordering, because you go up to the counter. I mean, you've been, so it's like you go.
I was actually there. I was like going on a run through the Heights, like went from my place and I was going on a run, and on my way back, I was like, I'll eat pizza.
Yeah, you just went for a run, right? Yeah. And so it's just kind of, I mean, number one, so like, is it, they have pizza there, but it's not, you know, a pizza place.
It's more not, like focaccia.
Yeah. And so, but you're going up to the counter and you're just ordering it there. They'll bring it over to the table to you. So it's like, so it's not, you know, like I mean, I know it's not Neapolitan style, but like, it's not Raza that, you know, like you're sitting at a table and you order and it's a pie. So it is like individual slices, but it's only what they have available right then.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, and just
make stuff so slow.
Yeah. And I was just like, and so I wasn't like,
so inefficiently. That's what annoyed me, because it's like they take one person's order at a time, but that's not how you should just be like, okay, what do you want? What do you want? What do you want?
Yeah.
And then, like, so that they're not like slicing one mushroom slice, putting it in, coming back, and then having them pay for it. It's like, what?
I mean, everything was good. Actually, the one thing, the broccoli rabe was kind of bland.
Broccoli rabe, it's difficult to be bland.
I think they blanched it for too long, and there was like no garlic or red pepper element. Yeah.
Oh man, that's a bummer.
Yeah, I love broccoli rabe, but it was a broccoli rabe sausage dish, the sausage was really good. But the pizza, you know, I did some air quotes right then. So like whatever, I mean, there was two. We got it was like a potato and sausage, you know, like slice again, that square slice, and then like a mutz and sauce and a slice, and then we had the salami and mutz, but that was like in the, I don't know if that was focaccia, it was like more like a sandwich, like kind of thing, and then the same thing with the mortadella, and that was it was good.
Have
but it
you
was just,
heard of brick and dough?
Brick and dough.
Oh no, my god! No. I gotta show you this.
Okay.
I went recently. I just happened to stumble upon it, and then I just like messaged them on Instagram, of course, and I was like, "Hey," and they're like, "Yeah, if you come in, like, we'll give you an appetizer."
Right.
And I was like, "Cool." So it's in Union City, technically. The pizza. So they use the same pepperoni as Prince Street.
Prince Street.
Well, just
wow.
Gorgeous, and it's BYOB. And there's like never a line.
Damn.
And the guy is super nice. They make also like, oh my god, look at that wood-fired sourdough.
Like pigs in a blanket.
But they make all the, and the pizzas are so inexpensive. They're like $10 to $14 for the whole pizza. On Sundays they do wood-fired bagels.
Damn.
Like all sorts of like crazy stuff, and they make their own ricotta, like all sorts of stuff, and the nicest guy ever, and it's just like, it's amazing. Then like even the story about their oven was really funny. They got it from this like one dude who makes them out in Key West. Like that's amazing.
Like at least like, so okay, just going like with Bread and Salt, brick and dough, like I was just like, Bread and Salt, but it's a pizza place, and I go there, I'm like, okay, so it's not just pizza, like I get it, but it just seemed like such a, there was such hype to it, and then I always hate reading those, like, whether it's in New York Magazine or the Times, and it's just like best. I mean, they did it all the time for Raza, like best pizza in New Jersey? ? Yeah. And just like that, you know, like treating it like the redheaded stepchild, you know, like, and it's just like, and then but like then the article saying like, guys, it's not that far. I'm like, you know what, you guys, you stay in New York, like we're having our own thing right now. And yes, I come over here and I like, it's fucking New York City. I love it. It's, you know, they, like you said, how many thousands and thousands of restaurants. But it's just like, but stop acting. It's practically another borough in a sense. Yeah. So just, you know, like if you're going to like the food and you're going to go there and you're even going to move to Jersey City or Hoboken or what have you, it's just like, stop like being like, so like it's an ironic thing. Like there's no food there now.
Yeah.
I mean, Jersey City's got legit food. It has for a long time, but just like everything else, it's stepping up its game, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Neapolitan pizza is my absolute favorite. I love going to the place. Have you been to Keste on Bleecker? Yeah. $5 margarita pizzas.
Perfect.
It's all I need in this world.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, they also have really good Brickandero has really good fried chicken sandwiches for $7. Like a full fried chicken sandwich.
Damn.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Like there was four of us, like my dad, my brother, his boyfriend, and I, and like, and we got so much food. We got like three pizzas and like a chicken sandwich and then homemade mod sticks, and like everything was like $50 total.
No, I mean, it's exactly, again, like, I mean, people are, you don't have to spend a lot of money to have like good quality food now. Like people just want, you know, they're going like, you know, keep it simple, stupid. You know, just like that route of it. But
it's like the fried chicken sandwich renaissance.
Fried chicken sandwich renaissance. I definitely, you know, I saw the article back in November. You were in the New York Post. It is chicken parm season right now.
It is chicken parm season,
Let's talk about that and talk about the sensuality of the chicken parm. What does chicken parm season mean? What is it?
So
how did that come about?
Oh, even crazier follow-up. So the person who is in that photo, who's referred to as Date, so she and I were walking into her building, and then someone behind me is like, Johnny Adler? And I was like, what? And it was the person who wrote the story. We never met. Oh. And she happens to live one floor above.
That's crazy.
And I was like, that's wild. Yeah, basically, I mean, that was a crazy whirlwind. It got picked up by, like, The Skim and Eater. Everyone was like, that's straight privilege. I was like, no, I just like chicken parm. Like, and they're like, I did think that was the funniest thing. They're like, well, clearly this is not a gay man, because he would never have chicken parm before a date, for a date. If you think about it, yo.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay.
Gotcha. All right. It was, I mean, all I was saying was, I think the best food for a date, there's no such thing as an aphrodisiac. It's a made up thing.
But
there's an aphrodisiac in every single culture, ranging from like conch to like spicy food to oysters. Yeah. And it's all made up. I just think the only actual aphrodisiac is just like good food.
Yeah.
Like if you just have good food that like tastes good and whatever, like, yeah, you'll be in a good mood.
Yeah, good food and like that level of like, not that it has to be considered comfort food, but just that comforting element of it. And this time of year, I mean, just a nice plate of chicken parm.
It does it. It hits. You know what I did have at that fair?
Yeah.
Downtown Jersey City, there was I can't remember the name. It was like an Italian sandwich truck.
Morty's?
Yes, yeah. I think. They had a chicken parm sandwich with vodka sauce.
Okay, yeah.
And that, to me, was seeing God. I mean, vodka sauce does it for me, like, every time. And so I was
you said you're a vodka guy.
Yeah, so, I am, exactly. And a vodka sauce and a shot of vodka are eight. But I really think it's just like, oh, man, that's just the next iteration of chicken parm.
Yeah.
Is vodka sauce. Because you could be like, ooh, pesto, but pesto is so overbearing and like intense that it can't do that, but like, man, vodka sauce. I like chicken parm. I think my favorite style is several thin layers. So each one remains pretty crispy, mm-hmm. as opposed to just one thick one, because like, then it also gets cold pretty quickly and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
So like, you know, at Fico's, the sandwich shop, I like the way they do the chicken palm, just thin layers.
Yeah, thin cutlets thin versus cutlets. The breast.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's some places that do, you know, like the chicken parm pizza, that sort of thing, which is like more gimmicky, but it's still, I'm sure, like...
Do you have a favorite chicken parm in Jersey City?
I have had one at, oh my God, a Pasta del Cuore that I loved. It was just like a special, I believe. Everything there is outstanding, like truly every single dish they have like blows me away. Their take on the sausage and broccoli rabe and the maltagliati, it's lasagna sheet pasta but then cut into like triangles, and then so you can like make like little like mini lasagnas out of it, you know. They had one that was spectacular. Everything they do is spectacular, but I haven't been to a lot of like red sauce joints in Jersey City, which I'm sure there are plenty.
You know, like my favorite chicken parm sandwiches, Antique Bakery on Newark Ave.
Antique Bakery.
Yeah.
Gotta hit that
so
up.
Good. It used to be in Hoboken and then they moved. Now, like, Antique Bakery is like, I think, like...
Like antique as in like old, like that spelling? Antique Bakery.
Yeah. I will admit there's been times I go there, I'm like, oh, it's not as good as the last time. The best...
Ooh.
But the best, I think it depends on like who makes it for you, so... You know, that's not, you know, so as far as like, you know, going to a place that you're always going to get, you know.
Oh, that's right next to Third and Vine.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like the best is just, I mean, I think the best part about it, or like when what makes it like the next step, is that they sprinkle like fresh, like grated Parmesan on top of it as well. And it's just really like a nice, since it's a bakery, the bread is just. Perfect.
Have you been to Sal, Chris, and Charlie's in Astoria?
No.
It is truly the largest sandwich I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, it's comically large. Let me see if I can find... There's a place right near here that has incredible sandwiches, too, called Pasillo. Pasillo Italian Panini. Okay. I'll show you that one.
Well, maybe I'll have to go there after this.
It is crazy. Their sandwiches are, like, $11, and they're... I'm not joking about this long.
Oh, wow.
And, like, stuffed. but, yeah, these... I gotta find like the perfect where someone compares it to their arm.
Sal, Chris, and Charlie's.
Oh man, I really would like to find one where someone does that. But I feel like you can get the idea.
Oh yeah,
that's one sandwich.
That's gotta be like a foot and a half.
Yeah,
like, it's about like 6 inches wide.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah,
it's insane. There's an old beer hall right near there. Like, I forget what it's called, like Astoria Beer Hall. It's been there for like 100 years.
Oh yeah, is that the Czech one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're obviously not supposed to bring in food, but I just went there and I was meeting my brother at the beer hall, and then I had it like wrapped up, and the guy was like, "ID," and I gave him the ID. He's like, "What's in the bag?" I was like, "Oh, nothing." He was like, "What?" And then I was like, "It's like, don't even like, it's like not even there." And then he was just like,
"This isn't the sandwich you're looking for."
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he was like, "Is that a sandwich from around the corner?" And then I was like, "No, it's a birthday present." And he was like, "Whatever, I'm not dealing with you." And then he just was like, "Go in." And then like I was like looking around, like sneakily eating it. It's like vinaigrette falling all over.
Thinking about chicken parms, there's a place in Sea Caucus called Natoli's, and they make a chicken
parm. I imagine there's many places in Jersey that are like the best chicken parms.
Yeah, ever. But they have the chicken parm with vodka sandwich is really good there. And that's just, I mean, again, exactly. Like, I mean, between New Jersey and New York, like, there's been Italians here forever, and they're all going to have, like, you know, Fiore's is the best mutts, at least in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, my roommate is related to him, so I kind of have to.
Have you been to, like, Arthur Ave area?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, Casa de Mutts?
Yeah.
That place is.
That's next level too.
I would say my favorite chicken parm overall though is actually in Boston. There's a place in East Boston which is like old Italian. I think now it's mostly like Central American and like West African, but there's still like a very old Italian group there. And it's this tiny place, been open since the 70s, and it's only like maybe like a dozen or so tables. Always like a multi-hour wait unless you get there.
It's like the Rao's of Boston.
Yeah, but like infinitely better. So first of all, they make they make all their pasta literally to order. So like you order it and then they like cut the pasta and make it. Their lobster ravioli has, and I'm not exaggerating, 1.5 pounds of lobster meat in the raviolis. The plates are like this big, and then another 1/2 pound in the sauce.
What is this place?
This is called Rino's, R-I-N-O apostrophe S. Their fusilli bolognese, you don't need Viagra. Like their fusilli bolognese, it has, it's equal parts pork, veal, and beef, and homemade fusilli, just like gorgeous chew and gorgeous stretch. Their chicken parm, and also their veal parm is bone in.
Yeah.
It's just like crazy. Every single thing they have is like out of this world, massive portions. Their seafood cannelloni, like everything, and not expensive. That lobster ravioli I just referred to is like $30.
Wow.
And it's this big, and it's like enough for like two people.
Do you have to order it with a Boston accent though and go lobster?
Yeah, you gotta go, wow, you got some lobster? And of course, every single person there is like family related somehow and like some sort of bizarre thing. Yeah.
Well, I asked you a couple of your like your top favorite movies.
Yes.
And so I want to talk a couple of movie scenes because, you know, it is called Foodie Films. So, Inception.
Inception.
Not like a foodie movie, but there is, I love that like one of like the initial ways, like it's like Leonardo DiCaprio explaining to, oh God, what's her name? From Juno.
Juno.
God.
Hold on.
Yeah. We need to, oh, what's her name?
I like see it.
Yeah. I see her.
I see her. I see him.
Everyone's shouting her name into their...
Ellen Page.
Ellen Page.
Yeah.
And it's like him explaining like Inception. So here, let's quick play that scene and then we'll talk about it.
When we're asleep, our mind can do almost anything.
Such as?
Well, imagine you're designing a building, right? You consciously create each aspect. But sometimes it feels like it's almost creating itself, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Like I'm discovering it.
Genuine inspiration, right? Mm. Now in a dream, our mind continuously does this. We create and perceive our world simultaneously, and our mind does this so well that we don't even know what's happening. That allows us to get right in the middle of that process.
How?
By taking over the creating part. Now, this is where I need you. You create the world of the dream. We bring the subject into that dream, and they fill it with their subconscious.
How could I ever acquire enough detail to make them think that it's reality?
Well, dreams, they feel real while we're in them, right? It's only when we wake up that we realize something is actually strange. Let me ask you a question. You never really remember the beginning of a dream, do you? You always wind up right in the middle of what's going on.
I guess, yeah.
So how did we end up here?
Well, we just came from the,
Think about it, Ariadne. How did you get here? Where are you right now?
We're dreaming?
You're actually in the middle of the workshop right now, sleeping. This is your first lesson in shared dreaming. Stay calm.
So like that they're in Paris, you know, they're just like in the corner cafe. He's explaining it. When you said this, and I'm just like, oh, you know, because I like talking food scenes from like non-foodie movies. That's the purpose of this little segment. And I actually kind of like... I like it because almost it reminded me of like what you're doing, because it's all about like him creating a world within the dream.
Yeah.
And that's like what you're doing with like your global foodie. You're creating the world in which like they're going to experience this like food.
Exactly. I'm living vicariously through them, and I'm guiding them in the right direction.
Yeah.
Like a good rabbi. But also at that time.
A true mitzvah.
Yeah, exactly. So I was also super into architecture at that time. And so that movie was like crazy for me.
Oh, yeah.
And then also, I think food is intrinsically related to architecture. In fact, Burns Steakhouse in Tampa?
No.
So it's the largest wine list in the world.
They have
600,000 bottles of wine.
Yeah.
Very great steakhouse. When you order dessert, they bring you to a separate room for like a dessert room, and it's gorgeous. Their head of desserts was just an architecture student. that like it worked at like, I don't know, Baskin Robbins, but an architecture student with no background in food really. Uh-huh. And then, but took her architectural knowledge
and brought it
to dessert. And so, I mean, they are intrinsically related.
Yeah.
And any sort of fine dining, you'll see that. But so yeah, Inception was always like, and also every single time I watched it, I would like realize something new.
Yeah.
So I was just like, oh, this movie's, and Leonardo DiCaprio. I mean, come on, man.
Oh yeah.
So good.
Did you see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Oh yeah.
I want Brad Pitt to win so bad.
I heard there is like the original director's cut is like an extra hour long or something.
Oh yeah, and I think they're gonna, what they did like with Hateful Eight is now like on Netflix, and I think it's 3 parts or 4 parts,
yeah,
like in its extended version, but they made it into like chapters, like episodes.
The thing was, when that ended, I was like, oh, I could go for another hour or two.
Oh,
like,
yeah. It's got a great pace to it.
Yeah, good. It just like kind of tiptoes.
And I think they shot certain like full episodes of those like Bounty Law and stuff like that. So I'd love for him to like release it. You know, Tarantino's always like, I'm making 10 movies, so he's got like one more under him, and then he's going to retire.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's already like alluded like, oh, Netflix doesn't count. Like,
Netflix doesn't count. Exactly. It's like, well, two-parters don't count.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, he already counts Kill Bill at Volume 1 and Volume 2 as just one movie.
I'm waiting for Volume 3.
Yeah. But I think he said that might be his 10th film he's talked about.
Yeah.
And he had Uma Thurman's daughter is in... Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. She's in the car. She's the one that doesn't go up. She's the one that pulls away in the car at the end with the Manson murders.
Oh.
That's her. Yeah, and she's in season 3 of Stranger Things.
Oh,
yeah. Once you like look at her,
yeah,
and you realize,
like,
I mean, she's a blend of like Uma and Ethan Hawke, but she sounds like Uma Thurman.
Yeah,
yeah. She's
so funny.
She was great. And then that's Inception. That was just
I loved it.
He's got his new movie coming out. Oh well, yeah, exactly. Always with
the Dark Knight guy.
Yeah, Hans Zimmer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, Tenet is Christopher Nolan's next movie.
Yeah.
I love it. It's always shrouded in secrecy, and he truly makes like Inception to me, like I thought it was going to be more like sci-fi than it was, but then I go see him like, wow, he truly made, like him and like Guillermo del Toro are the only directors, in my opinion, like in recent years that truly make original blockbusters.
Yeah.
Like Pacific Rim, you know? Like,
yeah. Honestly, I don't know what they're drinking, what's in the water in Mexico City, but those three producers or directors, like, they are just
on top of it,
every single thing. And
yeah, talk
like,
about Leo then the Revenant.
Like, yeah, and it's just like they're all just like, and they're all just like friends. They're just like, I really loved Inception. I still do. I haven't seen it in a little while, but
yeah. Another movie you gave me was Jackass the movie.
Okay, so this is a nostalgia one, and also because like when you watch it, it's so fucking funny.
Oh, I love watching all of them, and they kind of, you know, just like, because there is like a trilogy, supposedly they're going to make a fourth one. I think it's going to be weird without Dunn.
Yeah.
And you know, like I don't know if everyone's going to participate, but obviously, unfortunately, Ryan Dunn passed away.
Yeah.
But I love, since it is a trilogy, it's weird in a way that it fits to the trilogy formula of like the middle one seems to be like the darker one,
yeah,
and like weirder, darker things happening, and then the third one is just so bright and joyful because number one, like Steve-O
is
clean, yeah, exactly,
yeah,
sober, and it's just bright, like even just the colors that they use in
it,
the 3D nature
of
it.
It seems
all.
Like they're doing it with more like conscientiousness, oddly. But so the reason why I loved that one was, so when my dad would visit for like those like divorce weekends, so when my dad would visit Boston, so we had like, we were how would you say, white trash, I guess you'd say.
Okay.
so like not like trailer park white trash, just in the shit we did. So for like dinner, he would arrive Friday night, and then we would go to dinner, usually Boston Market. Then,
well, you're in Boston,
yeah, and there's markets,
yeah.
And then we would like, there was like a little gap between like the, it was like a strip mall. So between the Papa John's and the Filene's basement, you know that's a sweet spot. So we would like play with like these bouncy balls in this massive hall and whatever. And then usually we'd maybe like see a movie. Now the next day is where it got real trashy. So we would like wake up, whatever, go like the hotel breakfast, maybe swim a little. And then we would go to the movies around like noon.
Mm-hmm.
Then we would stay in the movies until like 8 or 9. So we would just like movie hop.
Yeah.
We'd just like sneak into all the movies. And when Jackass came out, also my dad is like classic divorced dad, like taking you to R-rated movies, letting you swear.
Being the cool guy. Yeah, doing the cool things. Yeah, yeah.
And so we would see like, And then we come back to my mom's and we're like terrified because I think Chucky's going to kill me. It's just like, God damn it. And when we saw Jackass, we just stayed in the movie theater 3 times. We just could not stop laughing because we had never seen something like that. Like, we had seen the show.
Yeah.
But like, the theatrics of the movie was so... it's a fake number.
Okay.
it was... so funny, and just like we just stayed in it, so that is always like my connection with it, because I'm just like, that is too funny, and it's just like I love Jackass, and there are probably some gross food scenes in there, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, I'll quick play a little bit of the wasabi shooter, but I just imagine it not being a good set, like, especially just hearing Steve-O starting to vomit. So just we'll play just the quick
the
little
worst ASMR. Like,
yeah, exactly. So we'll just quick play a little bit of that.
Hey, my man, wasabi, lots.
Sup?
Yeah. So today I'm gonna treat myself to some wasabi snooters.
A little circle.
God, chopsticks are so stupid.
That looks like a pretty good line, huh?
Oh my God, that scene is so gross.
That's just like...
That one, the one where they fart into the helmet, one's crazy.
Yeah.
But the funniest one ever is when he goes into a department store and shits in a toilet that's just there. He takes out the newspaper and he's like, all right.
there's certain times that, like, even like simple things, like when they do paper cuts between the fingers and toes and stuff like that. We're both cringing and shaking our hands right now just like thinking about it. But like, yeah, the wasabi shooters, again, played that, but I didn't want to play into him, the noise of him vomiting. But like, I mean, you watch that and you just, I don't know how old you are. I'm 32. Like, that was definitely like when I was in high school, that was like made us do dumber things.
Yeah,
definitely. Even though it gives you the warning beforehand, but that doesn't, you know.
The warning's kind of like, come on, do it.
Yeah, it's a little, it's for their own safety of them, like, so they can't get sued. Yeah. But it's a little bit of like a challenge, I think.
I was reading this funny thing and they were saying how difficult it is for them to get health insurance.
Oh, I can't even imagine what.
They're like, our greatest expense on the show is health insurance.
Yeah. I can't.
Because they're like, it's going to be like every year guaranteed.
Yeah. What those guys have, like, I mean, the ailments that I'm sure they all, I mean, you just see like Johnny Knoxville, the shit that he puts himself through.
It's crazy.
It's just crazy.
And then the stuff that, I mean, the amount of drugs that like Steve-O was doing just to like not feel the pain of is like, it's almost NFL level.
Yeah. Well, last but not least, I have a little round called Gut Instincts. So this is just whatever comes to your mind first. Favorite fast food?
Popeyes.
Popeyes. Did you had the chicken?
I had the chicken sandwich, but it's just the straight up chicken. In fact, for like in New Orleans, you can get like fried turkeys. Mm-hmm. You can get them with all sorts of different stuffings. So we would always get like fried turkeys, a bunch of fried chicken for like Thanksgiving and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Popeyes.
Go-to alcoholic beverage?
Vodka. Straight up, lukewarm.
Do you have a favorite kind of vodka?
I love Russian Standard. I love Sobieski. All the designer ones are bullshit. It's pure marketing. If anyone says they like Grey Goose, they're a garbage can. And they don't deserve to drink the holy water that is vodka.
Wow, that's I've had some vodka people on, but that you're definitely the biggest vodka enthusiast.
Oh, yeah.
Favorite childhood snack?
I don't even know. Cheese, just like cheese. Just like straight up cheese. Like nothing in particular, just like put dairy in front of me. Cheese and a glass of milk. I just want my throat to close.
Sweet or savory?
Savory, all the way. All the way. I mean, when I go sweet, I go hard. Mm-hmm. So like it'll be like white chocolate, caramel, macadamia, whatever. But I'd rather get 2 appetizers than an appetizer and a dessert.
Ah, that's a good answer. Favorite food city, domestic and international?
New Orleans, domestic, hands down. Per capita, there's nothing like it. If you consider that it's 1/25th the size in terms of population of New York, imagine there being 25 New Orleans in one city. Yeah, oof. I'll let you take that in. Internationally, I'm going to say Modena. In Northern Italy. I haven't been to Southeast Asia, so I should put an asterisk on
that.
Modena is, like mind-blowing.
Yeah, yeah. I've only been to Rome as far as Italy, and that was just because it was cheaper to fly from Greece to Italy than Italy to Croatia. So yeah. I was just like, well, I might as well stay in Rome for a couple of days. Yeah. But I've been to Thailand. Thailand's street food game is amazing. But then also I read something recently, or someone told me, that they're trying to like
get rid of it.
It's like, that's what that city is. Like, you go to Bangkok, I should say, in particular, like, just, I've never had better like street food than in Bangkok.
I want to do Thailand, but I think I want to do Vietnam first. Thailand is like, Vietnam is getting there as well, but Thailand is just so touristy right now. It's like painful.
But you might want to go before they get rid of that whole street food.
That's true.
Favorite cuisine.
Favorite cuisine? Oh, have you ever asked your mom who the favorite child is?
Yes, and it's me. I don't even have to ask her. I know it's me.
I mean, that's just a real big mood thing. But, I think pizza, Italian, because Neapolitan pizza.
There you go.
Yeah. It's just, I can eat that truly every single day.
Guilty pleasure food.
Vodka. I don't really limit myself with food. I kind of just like, I work out like every day for a lot, and like I walk like all the time, so I just like kind of eat whatever.
Okay.
But I would say my guiltiest pleasure food, something I don't eat that much, like a like greasy like J.G. Mellon cheeseburger.
Yeah.
Or like just like a steakhouse style like big meal, like, you know,
all the fixins.
German potatoes, spinach, cream spinach.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that, and then you just like die after.
Favorite condiment?
I'm not a crazy condiment person because I think food should sort of speak for itself for the most part, like especially barbecue. But I would say, with that said, like I love barbecue sauce on non-barbecue, like barbecue sauce on mac and cheese, or barbecue sauce with like sweet potatoes or sweet potato fries, stuff like that. Like, love that stuff.
What's the last thing you ate?
I had actually, this is not exactly fitting, but I had a vegan lasagna from the Village Den. It's the restaurant that's owned by like Anthony, the guy from Queer.
I didn't know that he had a place.
Yeah. So it was good. It was like a sweet potato and mushroom lasagna.
What's the name of it?
The Village Den.
Village Den. Write that down. Village Den. Just so you can like start following these people on Instagram, just reminds me and everything like that. What would be your last meal?
Oh, I have had so many conversations. So literally, I'll be walking. So my parents have a place, and like it's a very like tranquil place in Maine, like right along the coast. And like we'll go for long walks, and like it will be quiet.
Yeah,
I'll just be like, what would you guys eat for your last meal? And like, I mean, this is the stuff that keeps me up. We've had to build so many parameters around it because I get carried away.
Sure.
So we have to say like, well, is it last meal? Is it last day? How long do you have to eat this?
Okay.
I'm going to build a meal.
Okay, please, yeah.
Okay, so first I want to start with, a couple charbroiled oysters. Real nice.
Yeah.
But then I also want some raw. But the raw ones I want to be like East Coast or West Coast, not Gulf.
Yeah.
Gulf is just big boys. They're just like snot.
Yeah, those, yeah. That's why they're perfect for the charcoal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. A perfect steak tartare. Just like roughly chopped, like, you know, quail egg in the middle, like, give me that. Really, really, really fresh, just mozzarella, just that's it. Just like I'll eat it with my hand. And then moving on to a massive shrimp cocktail. Duh. Sorry, my mind's hungry. And then we move on to steak. I definitely want like a porterhouse, medium rare, smothered in butter. Like I want Paula Deen to be appalled. And then also sausage and broccoli rabe, or kente, for sure. Maybe also just like outrageously good sushi. Like I can all sushi is another food that if I had unlimited money, yeah, like
Morimoto himself, just like
yeah, I would eat sushi every single day.
Yeah.
And yeah, so like really, really good nigiri. And then for dessert, there's this pecan pie. Yes, I did say pecan. There's this pecan pie that's from Texas, from this place, and it comes in this wooden box and says, you're going to thank your lucky stars you're in Texas. And it's gorgeous. So pecan pie slice a la mode from there. And maybe like a terrific cannoli as well. Because I'm not crazy about cannolis. I'm very particular about where I get them from. Never a pre-batched place, anything like that. They have to do it right there or else it gets soft. But like a really good chocolate chip cannoli.
Ooh, yeah.
Like I could, yeah, I do love that.
Do you have a favorite place for a porterhouse?
Yeah, okay. And I know. But Peter Luger's is truly like, I think it's incredible. I don't care what, whatever. I just think it's like so good. I don't mind the shitty service there. I kind of like it.
Well, it's got that tavern feel.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's just like, I don't mind. And also people are like, oh, it's expensive. I'm like, every single place in New York is that price. Like any single steakhouse you go to, like there's no such thing as an affordable steakhouse in New York. So they're all going to end up being about 100 per person.
Yeah. I'm not saying this just because I had, had them on, but the chef and owner Benjamin of Benjamin Steakhouse, but Benjamin Steakhouse.
Yeah, I've been there.
Porterhouse there. That was really good.
Have you ever been to Keen's?
Yeah, for the Mutton Chop. Yeah.
I love that.
Oh yeah, that's a classic.
Yeah, I like places that.
That's just like a New York.
Yeah, just like gritty. Like love it. Benjamin Steakhouse is really good. That's actually right next to my dad. My dad lives in Chelsea.
Dine in or dine out?
Dine in every single time. So. Very odd. I work at a food delivery company. And I have never, other than for Domino's, because that's not food. That's just like
yeah, that's Domino's.
That's getting face fucked by pizza.
That's the guilty pleasure.
Yeah. But I have never ordered delivery, ever. So a couple things. One, I can usually just like cook something if whatever. And
got that vat of turtle and veal.
Yeah. and I just
what you call a callback.
Okay, professionalism.
Thank you.
I'm just like I have so much energy, so I like going Meanwhile, I'm like fidgeting. You think I'm like Michael J. Fox? I did have a teacher in high school tell me that my handwriting was like Michael J. Fox, so she made me do everything on
a teacher said yeah. that? And wow, that wasn't very
politically. AP US History. She made me do everything on the computer. Jokes on her. I cheated on every test. So I just know I like going out to places. I also love talking to people. That's like half the experience for me is like sitting at the bar. Like every restaurant, if they're like, oh, is it okay to sit at the bar? I was like, yeah, that's where I want to sit. Like, you get to talk to people, your food comes out faster, you usually get free shit.
Yeah.
And then also, I can recognize that, again, other than Domino's, food will never be as good delivered. Mm-hmm. But it's just like comparing, like the place that I work at right now, I think it's the best in terms of all delivery if you compare it across all the delivery platforms. But for me, still, for me personally, when I go out to eat, like I just want the best. Like you can't get a Neapolitan pizza delivered.
It's gonna be
chewy and gross.
You want it right out of the oven. You want it bubbling. Right out. Yeah, you want
it takes 90 seconds or 60 to 90 seconds to cook. It's gonna take 2 minutes to cool down.
Yeah,
And I just love dining out, and I love supporting local businesses as best as I can. And dine in all the way, 100%. I think it's like a lost art, like just dining in. I'm a very casual dresser always, except for like restaurants. I like respect restaurants enough to be like, I'm going to a nice restaurant. I'm going to dress like a little bit better. That's also what annoys me about Boston. People dress like absolute garbage there. They like, if you go to like a nice steakhouse there, people are wearing like a tracksuit and Uggs. And I'm like, what taught you that? Like, what sort of pack of unfashionable wolves taught you how to dress? But Boston. Charming little city.
What would be your spirit food?
My spirit food. Vodka. my spirit food? Rally's French fries. Checkers or Rally's French fries. Always hot. No one really understands how it works because the rest of it is shitty. But one aspect of it is so good, and it's always either too busy or doing absolutely nothing. But those fries
on the go,
just like never in one spot, and like you're never sure if it's open or closed. So Rally's, and also kind of dangerous. You've never been to a Rally's or Checkers that's like, huh. I would love to live in this area.
There's this one Checkers that would take in a train, like in Jersey, like NJ Transit, that I pass by that's in Patterson that you just go like, oh, God.
I would a lot of times, so like whenever I'd take like, because we didn't have Ubers for most of college, like it came like my last year, so we would just take cabs, and I would always like blackout make them like stop at a Rally's or Checkers like in the middle of like 3 a.m. New Orleans, like in the middle of the hood, and they were like, and I was like, don't worry, you'll get fries too. I think that's still like, once I did start doing that in Ubers, I think that had a serious effect on my rating. They were like, this guy would not leave, he would not get out of the cab without me stopping for Checkers fries.
You go to the movie, you have any snacks?
Okay, so I love the movies. Yeah. I go to the movies at least 2 times a week.
Wow.
I have that like AMC pass.
Yeah.
So my dad and I are monsters with this. So first of all, my Peacoat fits one bottle of wine in the inside pocket perfectly.
Yeah, sure.
So that's one bottle. But one time my dad and I met up, we were actually going to see, you know, The Look of Silence? About the like Indonesian genocide.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think that's, yeah, maybe it's something. Look, I think it's A Look of Silence. I think it's that.
Okay.
But it's a fascinating movie. You should definitely check it out. I don't know why, it's not really relevant, but my dad and I were like, oh, we'll meet up with each other, see you there. Didn't communicate any sort of food related thing. And so my dad comes in with a massive 2 bags from Italy, like focaccia, mozzarella, pasta, all sorts of shit. And then he has 2 pints of vodka. I bring in a 6-pack, and then I had like all this like Chinese noodle soups and whatever.
And they're not looking in like the bags or anything?
No, they don't look in bags, which is, you know, kind of how some of that bad stuff happens.
But
they just don't look in the bags. And then, and we were just had like an entire spread. But yeah, usually we try and bring noise sensitive food, not like chips or stuff like that. No, noodles are acceptable. Any sort of absurd sandwich is highly recommended.
There you go.
I brought in a shepherd's pie before.
You know, you usually get like the popcorn, the junior mints answers, the raisinettes, that kind of stuff.
It's like, do you have lamb?
With the mint jelly and the...
Well, the thing is, like, you see, they show you the calories on, like, the popcorn.
Well, and it's also just so freaking expensive.
It's so expensive. Yeah. So I'm like, well, I'm not going to do that. That's the same reason why when I fly, I bring in my own food.
Because
You're allowed to, and I bring my own, like, I don't know, different people call it different things, but I call them, you know, nips.
Well,
sometimes I'll say that to people, I'm like, you brought a bag of nipples. But yeah, you can bring as many nips as you want into there.
Yeah, because it's the under the ounce.
So I'll bring a reasonable 12 and then a massive sandwich from that place, Sal Chris, and whatever. And it's like this big. It's like bigger than my luggage for Spirit Air.
Yeah.
and uh, And yeah, so I'm like, and it's not, the weird thing is, like, it's not, I'm like the least cheap person. I'm not a cheap person. I'm incredibly generous. I don't mind spending money on things that matter.
Yeah.
But things like expense, overpriced, shitty airport food.
Yeah.
And like overpriced, shitty movie food. I'm like, well, if I can avoid that, I will.
There you go.
So be it.
Last but not least, a great, if not the greatest lesson you've learned in food.
Oh man, there's so many.
Yeah.
I would say there's no such thing as like too much attention to detail. There's no such thing as like an issue with perfectionist. Mm-hmm. I really learned so much in my like relatively short time at Commander's Palace. The thing that stuck with me the most was like, you know, like one of the Brennan, she, like Lally, we were like, we're working, whatever, and I just see her walk by and she like, you know, picks up a little like piece of paper that was on the ground.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just like, there's no such thing as like, you're not above anything. You know, in the food world, it's like, yes, there is this like rigid, like, you know, army structure, but at the same time, it's like everyone has to do their thing and everyone has to be, you know, responsible for what they do. And I think that carries into like all sorts of walks of life, but especially like that dossier on each person.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that, yeah, that's,
you would never know it, but that's the whole point. You never, ever, ever know it.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah,
it's, you know, they're not like, oh, we know that you like this, so here's this. It's just like, here's
presented
you
in front of
yeah,
you.
And, presented yeah, in front of them. Yeah. And it's kind of like, it's kind of like the most like ballin' ass way to like, for a football player to like score a touchdown is just put the ball down and walk away.
Oh, yeah. There's, no, like, there's no victory dance.
There's no victory dance. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just like, this is what I do every day. What do you want?
Yeah, I just did what I'm paid to do and like, I did it well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so it's like that.
Yeah.
And I love that. And, I mean, food is the fastest way to learn about a culture, to learn about people, to learn about history, colonialism, anything. I mean, it's just food, man. It's
yeah,
it's everything.
It's just, yeah, it's filled with history. Like, yeah. I mean, you could, like you said, I mean, it depends on who is with you on those tours, but I'm sure, you know, that comes up in just saying, like, you just see, like, in one area, you know, like, of the city. I mean, New Orleans is always the perfect example of just the amount of Vietnamese people that move there.
Oh, yeah.
And that just changing the food scene even down there.
Oh, yeah.
Or just people, adding something.
People call banh mi's Vietnamese po' boys down
there. Yeah, exactly. But
and, yeah, I think they're not 100% sure, but I think there's, like, an estimated something like between 5 and 10% of the city is Vietnamese now.
That's crazy.
And actually, they played an integral role in New Orleans during Katrina. Because when no food was coming in or out of the city, it's a big thing in Vietnamese culture to have your own garden.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were able to supply a lot of people with food.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's I mean, to me, I mean, that's the ideal America.
Yeah,
right?
You know? Absolutely. Well, absolutely.
Johnny, I can't thank you
my
enough.
Pleasure.
This was awesome. Please right now tell the foodies out there where they can like follow you on social
media,
all that good stuff.
You can find me just on Instagram at Your Global Foodie. My website, which still needs a little bit of work, but it's just yourglobalfoodie.com. Yeah, I mean, if you want to reach out to me, my number is 617-447-5508.
That is a first. That's awesome. Well, thank you again. We have a little catchphrase to end every episode. It's there's more to cut. So if you don't mind telling the foodies out there that there's more to cut.
Hey, foodies. Just like he said, there's more to cut.
Perfect. Thank you, man. Really appreciate
my pleasure.
Yummy, yummy, yummy. I got love in my tummy.